Episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
And my name is Alan, and we are from ReverseThieves.com. And if you would like to email us, you can email us at ReverseThieves@gmail.com, or you could come on our Cool Kids, Cool Cats, and Cool Dogs Discord and talk about any episode of the Speakeasy, our manga of the month, anime manga in general, or just cool things that you think cool people would be
interested in. Or you can come there and mourn the passing of legends in the manga industry. I'm still feel like very speechless from Kira Toriyama passing away. He passed away about a few days before we're recording this. He was like shockingly young to me. I was like, wait, I thought he was older than that. I guess it's not like super young, but I definitely thought he was a bit older than he was, because he wasn't even 70 yet. Also, like, you'll love this, Al. You'll really appreciate this, I think. It just made me think a little bit also about my own impending birthday, because Dragon Ball started in 1984, which is also my birth year. So I was like, okay, I don't know. Something about it just, like, it was all coming together. But it's just like he was so active in still, you know, in writing and doing all this stuff, and so it's just really sad that we've lost him. And like, this was one piece of news where it was like, this was on international, like, even my aunt and uncle came into town that day and they were like, we heard on the news over here that this like person, and it was like, did you know who that was? And it was like, yes, of course I knew who that was. So it was like an internationally reported story.
Well, I know like several countries in like South America and Central America and like China also were just like declared on like it wasn't just like here it was on the news, it was like the state all but makes it like a
official,
like,
you know, period of mourning or something.
Not a holiday. Yeah, an official period. Yeah, thank you very much, Kate. I was like looking for it. And so, which I was talking to my brother about, and I was like, and then I brought up like Saint Seiya being like weirdly popular and everywhere in the United, in everywhere else in the world except for the United States. And I would say that once again, I always gauge how common news is or how common shows are by if I hear anybody at work talk about it, and like the fact that I saw like multiple people talking about it, I think says a lot.
Yeah, it was pretty shocking. I feel like, you know, I think we always talk about every year like all the people that we lose and in the industry and such, but something about this felt like, I feel like some of the other manga greats that we've lost recently have been like, okay, they're older, I don't know, like something about it like is still really sad, but this felt like very shocking.
The first thing that actually popped into my head is like, it's not going to be as important to like the world as it was Toriyama, but like, I feel like Tomino doesn't have much time left on this planet. I'm like kind of like waiting for the other shoe to drop with him.
And like, I kind of want, and there have been a lot of like tribute drawings and from like very famous, you know, current mangaka and stuff for Toriyama, and there's just been such an outpouring of love. And, you know, like, I was never even a big Dragon Ball fan, but like, I've experienced at least some of Dragon Ball, and like, you know, it's still really recognizable and special.
You know what just popped into my head now that I think about it, who I feel really bad for, other than, you know, his family and people who knew and loved him, the poor MF that has to be the next character designer for the Dragon Quest games. Because Dragon Quest is such a, like, institution in Japan, and he's done, like, the main character designs for Dragon Quest for forever. Like, I have to pity the poor bastard who has to be like, yep, now I'm the guy who does the character designs for Dragon Quest. Please tell me how much my new designs stink and how the old games were great and mines are garbage. Cool. Thanks, everybody. Glad I took over this job.
Yeah, I mean, he leaves quite a robust legacy. So it's, and like I said, he's still like so current. And what he, you know, it wasn't as if he wasn't...
Like he hadn't done anything in like a decade and was just like... They only popped him out every once in a while to do like occasional Dragon Ball stuff.
Yeah, so, you know, just, quite a shocking loss at the beginning of the year. I don't know, 2024 has been, it's been a little bit of a weird one. So it tracks, I guess. Anyway, this episode of the podcast is not about that. It is about... Well, it's not about any one thing, I guess. It's about a bunch of random things that we've been watching and finished up from the previous season. So before we get to that...
It is time for the Type Moon Minute. After the bombshell that was our last Type Moon Minute, despite what some people say, a little lighter, we just had two complimentary, I would say, FGO events, which were... The Valentine's Day event is just Valentine's 2024. And we also had the White Day event, which is Charlemagne's Montjoie Chivalrism. Which is a, what do you call it? They don't tend to release new male servants for White Day, but they tend to give a popular male servant a like fun costume. The new servant for Valentine's Day was Andromeda, aka Perseus's wife. Which is, I only mentioned that her that way because Perseus is tech, like when the game originally came out and the data on the game was like less well guarded, people like pulled out a list of like all the initial servants, and almost all of those servants on that initial list have come out except for like two Sakura face alter egos, which means nothing to Kate, and Perseus. And so everyone was joking that Perseus's wife got in before Perseus, who's been tactically supposed to be in the game since 8+ years ago. So he was on that initial list 8+ years ago, still isn't in the game, but his wife got in to the game. The White Day event is all about Charlemagne, who is, you know, the famous king that would go on to found the Holy Roman Empire and all that. Technically, this, like, almost, he's almost secondary character to Cyrano de Bergerac, who's, like, not summonable because, in a way, Cyrano was always, like, in the shadow feeding the, you know, like, the love advice and, like, the cool lines to, I forget the name of the guy in the book who he's, like, helping court. He's like only like a he's like a shadow servant. He isn't a full servant, cause like it was like that's more appropriate for a man who like lived in the shadows and only like, which people are wondering if he will eventually get like a full sprite and maybe just be like a low rarity servant, but so far he's only like a shadow in this, and he's just like a like almost like a, you remember Kate in Utena the Shadow Girls? He's like one of those. Those were both of the events. When this event is over, they're supposed to have like a stream at the last, like FGO has these. Oh no, it's the next one is going to be Anime Japan is coming out in Japan. And so one of the days in Anime Japan, they're going to have an FGO day and everybody. And it is generally confirmed. Just with, like they said, the next story chapter is going to come out like at the end of the month. At the end of the month, the last weekend of the month is Anime Japan. So either right after that panel or like sometime the next week, we will be getting the next story chapter. So I will probably talk about that and any other Type Moon news we have next month. So I will see you then, Type Lunatics.
All right. So on the last episode, we talked about new shows. And one of those new shows was the latest in the Preacher franchise, but this time we're going back to talk about the show that just ended, Soren Sky Preacher, which was, you know, like kind of a departure from many other versions of the show that we've seen more recently. Our main heroine is the blue Preacher. She's not the pink Preacher. And she's also from a different world, so she was from the Sky Kingdom. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. Because yeah. They have a king's
queen. I was
going
to say, but I was like, was it Skyland? What was it called? I think maybe that was what it was called.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's Skyland. I forgot the name of the kingdom she comes from. Because there are multiple kingdoms in that world.
But yeah, so she comes down to Earth and, you know, there's... It's just still kind of started off on a different foot than the other Precure series, but...
And we had some very, like, big firsts for Precures. I guess I'll say it. We had our first, like, adult Precure, like a woman who was, like, you know, out of college, a working person who was a Precure. And we had our first full, like, not just, like, one episode or, like, temp, but first full male Precure, which I think were all, like, big firsts for the series.
And then I think, you know, the other component of it for me is always like, well, how does it end? How does it, you know, where does it go with the villains of the series? You know, because Precure is pretty variable about its villains and, you know, and that's fine. But it's just something that it's like something that I always look for is, and I thought that they did a pretty interesting job with the ultimate villain. I feel like there were some good surprises there, but also some like plot connecty things that happened. And so I felt like it wasn't just big cloud evil at the end. So I appreciated that.
My goal is despair. And I laid it out for you. I don't know what you want.
And kind of one of those, you know, oftentimes it's like all the lead up to the main bad guy is the more interesting stuff, whereas like, you know, this I think at least tried to keep everything more connected and plot driven. So I really appreciated that about the story. You know, I thought the end, you know, I thought I got emotional at the ending. So I thought that was nice. But I did, I think, ultimately feel like Precure always has like a middle section that is like usually a dip in, you know, stories and quality, etc. And I definitely felt that here. I felt like a lot of it, I think. I just didn't feel like they were doing a whole lot with each character. Like some characters I thought they did a lot of interesting stuff with. But I think just like overall, it felt like a lot of spinning their wheels about their personalities that we already knew. So how did you feel about the mid sections, Al?
Yeah, I would say I don't think I disliked it as much as you, but there's definitely like a slowdown till that one point where they go back in time and like see like the past of the Sky Kingdom. And, like, their, like, predecessor Cure, I feel like that's when things started picking up and weren't just, like, goof-a-doops. I mean, I feel like when that one, like, the handsome, foppish guy captures, like, the main Cure's, like, mentor, that part was a little interesting. But once they resolve that and he just becomes, like, a loser kicking around, like, the plot dips back down for
yeah,
a while.
I feel like that was, like, the high-stakes moment, and then there's just really nothing going on, I guess. I actually did like, stuff with, like, becoming an artist, and, like, I thought those episodes were actually pretty funny, and, like...
With all the parts where he, like, tries to pretend he's another artist yeah. to, like, destroy like, the confidence of the other girl who's
an
artist.
And, like, every time he would, like... try to destroy her by like saying something, she'd be like, that is such good advice, you're so wise, because of like, you know, like she would like misinterpret, or he would say it in a way that like she could misinterpret it. So
and be like, you know, that's good criticism that I can build off of, and he's like, no, it's supposed to destroy you and make you stop wanting to do this stuff, and she's like, you know, that is something that I've been doing wrong, and here's like, how I can do it better. Thanks a lot, you know. That's why artists, like, talk to each other and, like, really, you know, build on each other's works. And she's like, I'm going to support you anytime you do art. And he's like, God damn it!
Yeah, I did really enjoy pretty much all of those episodes. So I did think there were, like, moments of humor. But, like, yeah, overall, I just felt like it felt like the middle section just was really long and just didn't have enough highs, I think. Like, I expect it to have its lows. It's a 40-plus episode children's show.
I think it did not help that they didn't really have that many bad guys. Like, usually, like, the new bad guy adds, like, a new dynamic, and, like, they usually... They either, depending on the series, will, like, really like be the counterpoint to one of the cures or like interact or challenge the cures differently. But I feel like there weren't that many of them this time, and that meant that like you went through the same cycles with like the same guys without like any kind of new like dynamic change.
I agree with that. And I guess, you know, they resisted doing the like villain who becomes a precure or something. But at the same time, I feel like it just needed some excitement in the middle there. Like it needed that, if or something else like it.
The only thing I could think is like if they added one or two more villains, that might have been more interesting. But the immediate thing when that popped into my head is, but we just get clown hobos, which are possibly worse.
Absolutely. I think definitely worse. I don't know what I want, really. I feel like I don't know what I expect. I guess, like, it shouldn't really be that surprising. But I will say I really hated their paint palette attack thing. I don't know. Like, I felt like they didn't up their attacks. Like, I kept thinking that, like, in the middle we were going to get some, like, new attacks or, like, new combos or, like, something. And I feel like they really just didn't even do that.
Well, I think the problem also with the... Man, this is, like, some, like... technical level pre-cure talk, but that's what you come to the reverse themes for. It felt like they really wanted more interaction. I don't remember their names, but like teacher lady and bird guy, like that tool is definitely there to have them interact more, but it just always just seemed to do what the plot needed it to do that episode. But it was never, like, to quote like Gao Guy, it was never the key to victory. It was always just like, we'll steamroller this one thing so that something else can help defeat the bad guy. And so it wasn't overpowered, but it also was just like this weird sonic screwdriver for problems. I don't know. It wasn't hype enough to, like, defeat the enemy, but it wasn't, like, defined enough to, to be like, oh, and this is where they're going to use it. Also, just speaking of this before we move on to anything else, since I brought them up, my roommate mentioned this, and I can't feel like I... How much do you feel that the show was shipping the teacher lady and bird kid?
I feel like...
Because my roommate thought that, and I don't have an answer. Like, I'm literally like, I'm not sure. Were they? Were they not? I'm not sure. I'm curious. You, Kate... As an expert on shipping, and she's like, fuck you, Al. Never give me that title.
I feel like I'm an expert in the sense that I have observed enough to know that, like, 100% people were going to ship them. I think that the show made it easy to do so.
You feel the show was, or, like, I don't know, but they made it easy to?
I do want to mention that she did not go to college, so she's, like, out of high school, I believe. Mm. So... Not okay. that makes it better, because he's like 12, so like I'm not trying to like hand wave this, just to clarify.
Yeah, cool, no.
Of course, he's also a magical bird from another land, so, you know, whatever. Anyway, I think I saw it a lot more at the beginning of the story than I felt it. I felt like it tapered off a little bit, and it became more of a, like, encouragement, sort of, like, little brother, maybe, situation. But you can interpret that any way you want, because they are not related. And I think earlier on, I also got those vibes, because I talked about it, just among friends, that, like, because there was something about their interactions where, like, he was so, like, sort of embarrassed, you know, like, just... I don't know. It was like the way he was reacting. But I don't, if at the very least, I don't think Ageha like felt that way about him. But like if he had a crush on her, like that also wouldn't be a big shock. But I don't think that there's anything canonically to like imply that that is really how they felt about each other. But it's, you know, Precure is also a master of like, well, we'll just like subtly.
Yeah, we'll just put this here and stuff happens. I didn't do anything.
I mean, we also just finished the adult Precure show where like she is now in a relationship with her teacher. So like technically he was a, I mean, technically again, he's a mascot from another realm that changes into like a man. So like, is he really? I don't know, but like let's just hand wave that.
At least when they're like fully romantically involved, they're both adults.
Yes. But like feelings were, there were like flashbacks which were making me uncomfortable. Like you were like, can we just not be reminded that like when you first met, this is who you were? Okay. So, Precure doesn't do much romance. They generally stay away from it, although I occasionally they dabble. But in this case, I don't think it was actually romantic, but you could interpret it that way.
Because I know the fandom ships characters insanely hard. But I was like, I kind of see what you're saying, but I don't think that like fully like, yeah, these two, we're gonna. But like you said, it's not like they don't leave it on the table and say, I don't know, you can do what you
But yeah,
want.
I don't feel like even the ending of the story, it doesn't imply like they could have like shown them in the future or something, or like, I
Yeah.
think I feel like they part ways and it doesn't seem like, either of them is going to the other world to be with the other one or something like that. So like
Well, he does mention that like he's gonna like explore the world, and like he mentions that he like was super inspired by her and he wants to explore the world and like come back and see her again and show her how much she's grown. So that's why I was like, that's why I was like
Yeah, we could see that in a very familial way, or we could see that in a very in a romantic way. Well, when Adult Precure 2 comes out, we'll know the answer. Did we already talk about Adult Precure on here and how like confusing I found that like they're best friends, but they're also both princes? And I was like, but wait, they're not brothers, they're just best friends. How did they both become princes of this kingdom? Whatever.
I know that we definitely talked about this in real life,
It
Kate.
doesn't
I
matter. I'm just bringing it up here because I find
possibly
it
talked about it
amusing.
on the
I'm just
podcast.
like, that's not how princes work. Like, that's not how monarchies work. But maybe I'm wrong, and that is how they work in the fairy realm.
Look, Kate, you just don't
I
understand
don't.
fairy politics. How very culturally insensitive of you.
Back to Sorenskaya for just one more moment. Where do you feel like it ranks for you, in terms of, not like number wise, but like, good, mid, bad.
I mean, if those are my only three
Those
options,
are your options.
then I guess mid. I mean, I don't feel like it's like one of the greatest precants. It's not Hard Catch. What's the one with like Go Princess? Just like the like chef's kiss. It's definitely not, Happiness Charge or, Sweet Precure, the low end. You don't have to watch every precures.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think I probably didn't even like it as much as Tropical Rouge, which I thought was like such a fun.
I mean, obviously, Tropical Rouge scored with me because of one character. But I'd say I found that around, like, maybe a little better than Wizard School Precure, but not, like, by that much. Like, it was, like, not a waste of my time, but also not, like, I think I'll probably be remembered most for, like, taboos or, like, things that, like, basically the fact that it said, hey, look, unless people, like, fucking hated any of these characters, like, hey, we can have like older precures and it'll still, you won't destroy everything. Or hey, you can have male precures and it won't destroy everything.
Yeah, I feel like that was really its biggest contribution. And I also thought our main heroine was like a little bit different than what. And then the new Precure, the main heroine, is very different. So I guess they're trying out some new stuff, which I'm all for.
I'm still wondering in the new Precure, is that dude friend of hers and his bunny gonna become Precures?
I think that is, speaking of romance being added in, like clearly a clear romantic link there. Yeah, we'll just have to see.
I finished up a bunch of series, but one of the ones I wanted to talk about was The Ancient Magus's Bride, Season 2, Parts 1 and 2. It had Part 1. And then they took, a season, a core, whatever you want to call it, off And then they did the second half later. As I mentioned with my review from the last one, I was like, that is not a place to end, my friend. That is like, nothing is resolved. Because, yeah, we basically, like, find out that, you know, like, one of the grandparents of one of the students is, like, basically using her as, like, a spy and, like, spying on all the students. And there's, and that, like, comes out at the end of the season. And that's, like, a little bit resolved, but more, it isn't resolved. It's more like, all right, now everybody knows that. But she still works for her grandmother. Her grandmother is still clearly, like, just not a good person. And there's still, like, a monster stalking the halls of the school, trying to drain people. There's still, like, a missing magic book that someone stole. And none of these questions are answered. And so, thankfully, this part two, all of those questions that I just mentioned, you know, what happens with the grandmother, who or what is the monster stalking the school, what happened to the missing tome, like, what are the links between the characters, the dark backstory of Chise's roommate and what's all up with her. Unsurprisingly, almost all these stories are actually interlaced. As I mentioned in our anime awards, if you pay attention to the second season opening, it should be you can probably figure out a lot if you, like, look at the storybook pages and what's going on there. And, you know, obviously, the puppeteer who's moving Chise and all the people around the puppet book is not revealed, but you might be able to figure things out if you're clever. There's still a bunch of, like, important mysteries. So this wraps up, like, there's a big ritual and confrontation. It's very, like, D&D, like, we must stop the, you know, the ritual before it goes off at, like, you know, the evil castle, essentially. And it complete with a, like, big boss monster fight. Although, you know, it being Ancient Magus's Bride, it's not all just, you know, shonen. It's a little bit of, like, you know, figuring things out and the such. But it's clearly not the end, technically. Chise hasn't finished her schooling. There is still a lot of mystery about her and, like, her, like, having merged with that dragon and also merged with that immortal kid. So, like, those are all still, like, very important ongoing mysteries. And, like, that immortal kid definitely, like, it's like, some of my plans have, like, maybe not been scrapped, but definitely moved in interesting directions, but still forward. So there's clearly still more story to tell, but at least basically the story of her first year at, like, magical college is over.
Do you think it's going to continue to be set in magic school, or did you feel like they've wrapped that up and the next story will be elsewhere, or you couldn't tell?
If they wanted to do, like, a time skip, in my humble opinion, they could just skip to her being graduated. Or she could just leave. Like, essentially, the thing is, man, I'm going to use some, like, Mage of the Ascension things. Like, everybody else at that school is, like, a hedge wizard, like a lesser wizard. And she's, like, an ascended mage. So her magic is just, like, everybody mentions that, like, it's kind of weird. But she's like, well, most of you people all grew up in magical families who, you know, taught you, like, the basics of magic and, like, the principles and all that. And, like, I have, like, more power than most of you, but I only have, like, what little, like, you know, her husband has taught her. And so she kind of went to the school just to, like, get, like, you know, the basics of, like, magic training. So theoretically, they could just, like, then actually have to finish. So if they wanted to get them out of there, or they just wanted to skip ahead, they could. If they like that setting, they could stay there. So I haven't, like, read ahead or, like peeked ahead. But in my opinion, there's nothing to say that, like, school has enough mysteries and stuff and, like, other things that could going on that they could stay at that school. But, yeah, overall, it's basically up to the author how much he likes the magic school and how much he wants to keep that setting around, or how much, because like those characters don't just all die the minute she's out of school or like leave school. So like they could come up again.
You haven't read, Al. You don't know what the next arc is.
True. I guess so. I didn't realize that she was like only the character she interacts with the real. And the minute that she leaves, all they just fade out of existence.
Maybe she burns the school down with everyone in it when she leaves.
Seems slightly out of character, but maybe, you know, she does have some weird, like, murderous impulses because of her connection to that immortal kid. So I guess it's not out of question. She has, like, now just realized that she does have, like, a murder impulse towards, like, supernatural threats. So,
well, speaking of the first sort of season story, whatever you want to call it, but how do you feel like this compared, you know, to that?
It's a lot more focused, I'll say that much. The initial story seemed like a lot of world building and character building. Not that there's no character building. Like, Chisei, like, I think one of the main plot arcs for this is, like, especially in, like, the first season, like, Chisei is, like, very clearly does not, because of her, like, upbringing, doesn't value her own life. And, like, frequently, like, several times, characters have mentioned that she, like, almost sacrifices her life or, like, throws herself in harm's way to help other people, but not like partially because she's a good person, but partially because she clearly does not value her own life. And so like one of the main things she learns in this arc is that you can still help people without like always endangering yourself, and that like sometimes you don't have to be like, I gotta look out for number one, but maybe you shouldn't throw yourself in front of every bullet when there's maybe another option. And just like her learning, especially through like the very broken self-esteem of another character, to like treasure and cultivate her own self-esteem. So it's not like Chisei has no growth in this arc, but I mean, I just explained the pretty big plot arc for her. But I do feel like it's very much more focused on like, and there is stuff about, once again, her and her like having this part of that dying dragon who gave her dragon powers and the immortal kid, and that still comes up and stuff. And there's stuff about, you know, the Magus himself. But I would say it's much more focused on the story in the school and like just one continuous storyline, as opposed to like a bunch of storylines that go over and maybe have some loosely related themes. So I feel like one of the strengths of possibly the earlier arcs was, if you didn't like a story, it only lasted about 2 or 3 episodes, and then they moved on to the next story. Whereas this is two seasons of just the mystery at magic school arc.
Okay, my final question. What's the percentage of Ruth being the best in these episodes?
He definitely has some definite MVP for their big castle assault. And I'd say it depends. It goes from about 30% to 50%. But at the end, it definitely jumps up to about 70% for the big, like, you know, D&D boss battle fight. And, like, you know, them infiltrating the castle and all that stuff.
I'm very glad to hear that, because I am definitely going to get to this eventually, so.
So, I just, there are some lulls. He does, you know, he pulls up some clutch stuff before that point. But, you know, they got to bring the whole band together and everybody's got to do their part like a proper D&D party for their, you know, their big stop the ritual thing at the end. So, and, you know, Ruth is super important. So he does some important things there. So Ruth, still integral to the story, still doing his thing, still being awesome. I look forward to seeing more of it. It seems popular enough that if they didn't have more, I would be utterly shocked, but I'd also be a little surprised. It seems like, I assume once again, they'll probably take off for another year or two, you know, let some story build up.
All right. So on my plane ride back from Japan, of course, I love to peruse the like entertainment. What are the movies? What are the Japanese movies that are, you know, playing? And they had one that will clearly pique Al's interest as much as it piqued mine, which was, it was called Don't Call It Mystery.
I only have one question before we begin. Is it one of those things that is like an ANA flight exclusive? Because I know that there are some like subtitled and dubs that are only on like certain like JAL and ANA. I just like have read stuff and like they're like certain dubs that are famous for like you've only ever seen it if you like flew a you know ANA or JAL flight in, you know, these years, and or the only way to ever see this subtitle is if you see it on you know that certain airline's plane. I'm just curious if you knew or not. I mean, it could be something that's like easily commercially available, but I do know that there are like one or two things, like then it would be like super exclusive review that, you know, you could only have done if you, you know, flew a plane the last year or two or something like that.
I am not sure. That's really interesting. I didn't know that. I watched it subtitled, so I don't think there was, I'm trying to think. I don't think there was a dub. It's a fairly recent movie, so that I feel like it might not be out in I don't know that it's out in English, you know, otherwise. So it could be that it's only like on this, you know, on these flights. It came out in September 2023, so it's you know, fairly recent in the theaters. But yeah, when I saw a title like that, I, of course, was very intrigued. So I went ahead and watched it. And then, of course, afterwards, I was on a plane, so I wasn't, like, looking things up or, like, you know, learning. So it was just, like, let's go and see what happens. So it's about Totono, who is a curly-haired detective. He's in college. And he gets sort of hired, I guess you could say, by this other, like a young woman who is like, okay, well, my family has like a history of deaths and like there's all these mysterious deaths. And so like, I think that like all of us who are about to inherit, it's like, we're all gonna be killed. And so like, I want you to come and like figure out what's going on and like solve the mystery of like, who is killing everybody. He is a very reluctant to do this. And also his personality is very, he's like a very awkward character who he's not a reluctant detective necessarily, but he's definitely reluctant to do this particular job, I guess. But he's more of like an amateur genius sort of character, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. He's not like a real, you know, PI or something. And so then unfolds over the course of the movie sort of what is like this big family history, because it's this wealthy family. But there are all these, like, not like everybody in the family has been murdered or anything. And most of the deaths all look like accidents, but it's always particular people. And it's like, they're kind of young when it happens. So it's not as if like they all had heart disease or something that like would explain it. And so he's like partially trying to figure out like, what is the connection between these particular family members? Because it doesn't seem to be any like, you know, you can't draw a straight line essentially about it. Or at least not an obvious one.
Not everybody related to Dasuke.
and it's like, you know, it's like the brother of this person, but then like, you know, the child of, yeah, I don't know. It's just like, it's not like, oh, it's all down one part of the family line or anything like that. And so he's, you know, kind of at first he doesn't really think anything's happening. So part of like, I would say like the first half of the story, he's sort of like, I don't really think there's any connect. Like, I think you, this woman who's hired him, are being like a little paranoid, and that like you really don't want to believe that your father's death. Like you can't accept it. You're in denial, and like you think it's like this grand conspiracy, but like it's not. And then he eventually, like, just through various things that happen, is like, oh, I think that's true, but I actually do also think something weird's going on. So it's like both things can be true at the same time. And the family history and inheritance thing is like really, like it's pretty bad. And then The reveal of what has happened is like shocking, and I felt like very difficult to like figure, and I shouldn't say it's difficult to figure out, because it's not. Once you get one piece of evidence, and like that piece of evidence, I was like very frustrated, because like this one piece of evidence is basically like tells you the entire, it's like, oh, well, once you have that, you literally know the whole story. And I wasn't love, I didn't love that.
It's been like so many years, but I remember learning about Father Knox's rules from Umineko, and like one of the rules of Father Knox's mysteries for like good fair play mysteries is that the detective and or the story can't keep back one key piece of evidence that if shown will
Well, they don't keep it back. I'm just saying that, like, it felt like everyone was spinning their wheels, and then they get this one, they find out this one thing, and then that one thing just basically explains everything to you. And it's like, it was less fun, I guess, because it's like, oh, well, okay, you got this one thing, and it was from one singular person, and like this one thing now just like makes clear everything.
Well, I guess the implication is also that if you just gained it at the very end, that's also not a fair play mystery because you couldn't have figured it out before the one character basically. If basically the difference between figuring it out and not figuring it out is that one piece of evidence, it should be Chekhov guns earlier and then like a true fair play mystery.
Well, the thing is, I guess actually my complaint about it is maybe a little different than what I totally hear what you're saying now, but I think my complaint about it was I was kind of disappointed that I got all the information from like literally one source. It was just like, okay, well, now I know everything from this one thing, and it felt like a little less fun to get like the answer from this like one thing. And then the other component of that I wanted to mention was I thought it was pretty obvious who the killer is in this story, because at very early on, it's like it can literally be no one else. Like there is just no, if you're even a good, minorly good fictional sleuth as readers, you know, are, I just felt like it was like, well, you haven't given me any like any other suspects, so there's, unless you're just going to pull off somebody that I have not even seen, then there's like no way it's not just this person. And I think that becomes very obvious like very quickly.
So the only mystery is why they're, or like, what's the link more than.
Yes, I feel like in a certain sense, but the detective in the series doesn't figure it out. Like it's not like he's like, oh, I know it's him, and I just can't, you know, like, you know, I just don't have the pieces or the evidence to put it, you know. It's not like, it just feels like he, but as a watcher, I guess, I was like, it's obviously this person.
All I could joke is our conversation that we had before the podcast. It's obviously Toko.
It was, that's who it was. Yeah, so I think I was kind of like, it just felt too sort of like linear in that way, where I was like, all right. To be fair to the series, I think the twist isn't really like who did it, but it's like the why and like what's going on sort of thing. I get it, but I also, again, felt like we got that information from like one thing and then we knew everything. So once I got off the plane, so I thought it was okay. That was kind of my assessment of it. But once I got off the plane and I was like, oh, let me go, like, what is this? Oh, it's ba okay, so it's based on a manga of the same name. So that manga is actually being released in English by Seven Seas in omnibus form. But I didn't mention this yet, but like at the very beginning of this movie, there's like a kind of a weird scene between our main detective and a mysterious guy who is like, I don't know if he ever has a name in the story, or like maybe he has a name, but like they're having like this weird, there's just like a weird opening scene, I guess you could say, to this movie. And then like it never comes up again, and it's just like, what? Like, what was that? Well, apparently, this movie is a direct sequel to a TV series of, and so it like picks up directly after like that TV series. So this is like the next arc of the manga. So it's not the beginning of the story. So like our detective just doesn't really get introduced. You know, you're just as, I think you're supposed to know who he is and like what, you know, what his deal is basically, because you would have presumably seen this TV show.
It would be like coming into Demon Slayer during the train arc movie and being like, wait, who are all these people?
Yeah, so I was like, oh, okay, I guess that explains, like, you know, some of it. I mean, it wasn't, again, it was, since it's very focused on the mystery, it wasn't, like, too, like, impossible to, it's not, like, impenetrable or anything, but I was like, okay, well, that explains a couple of, like, weird lines and, like, that scene that we didn't understand why that never came back into being, like, relevant to the story. I don't know. I was not impressed with that mystery. I can't recommend it. I wish I could because I didn't even know the manga was coming out in English. And, like, that would have been really exciting to have a new mystery series. But, yeah, I just wasn't thrilled. Don't call it mystery. Yeah, don't. Because...
I wonder how much it was like, maybe like certain characters or that conversation is important, but they didn't want to just put in the main TV series. So like, let's just do a movie and knock that out. And then like, then if we do like a second season, like it's there, but we don't have to waste like part of our second season, especially if like maybe it's a little more arc based, but I don't know anything about the series, so I can't. That's just some Al speculation. That's an Al theory.
Do you know that he quit YouTube? I'm yes. So happy.
I do know. I remember somebody's...
I hate that. I could just hear... I can't believe you said that, Al. It makes me so upset. Like, I hate that sound. Like, just the sound of it. I just... It, like...
It's in my head because I just found out that he finally retired. Hey, Kate.
All right. What?
Speaking of things that you... What do you call it? Hot takes that you have that the internet might disagree with you. Let's go into our final thing.
Oh, boy. That's right, everybody. We're talking about Jujutsu Kaisen Season 2, the flashback arc, mm-hmm. and the Shibuya arc.
The Shibuya
incident.
Yes. Yeah, it was interesting how this season, like... I feel like it was a little odd. How it started, because it just like goes right into the flashback arc, which I mean, I'm sure there are people out there who like our main character, but like so many shonen series, I feel like Jujutsu Kaisen kind of had the, I mean, there are always people who just like, no matter what the series, I like the main guy because he's main guy. But I feel like so many people like Gojo, that like having a Gojo flashback arc was like, I'm sure that people are like, and why isn't this the whole series?
I don't want that to be the whole series, but I also pretty consistently forget the main character's name. I'm
like... I don't remember anybody's name. Kate is always surprised when I'm like, I remember that character's name! And you're like, that's impressive, Al. It's like Itadora?
Itadori, I think.
Itadori. Yeah, there you go. That sounds right. I'll believe you.
I really loved the flashback arc. You know, I thought it had some really good emotional beats. I think it had some really good surprises and like some surprises that, you know, sometimes when you get a flashback arc, right, because we are in, by the nature of it being called a flashback arc, we're in the present and we know a bunch of things about a bunch of characters. And so sometimes a flashback arc can feel perfunctory in a sense. Yeah. Yes, exactly. We thought of the same word, Al, where it's like, it's not necessary. It's like needed, potentially, but like not that exciting. But I didn't feel that way about this.
Yeah, no, it feels like it added a lot of context to what came before. Even more than that, like, I don't want to say subverted expectations, but maybe you're like, oh, I was looking at this completely wrong.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting for this flashback arc to follow the movie. So we had season one, we had the movie, which is Zero, which is also a flashback story. And then we have this. So we're going even further back in time. So like the movie is a flashback, but then this is a further flashback. And yeah, I felt like it gave such an interesting update to the, like, the relationship between Gojo and Geto and like what that is like. I feel like you get a sense of that only in the movie, and then you get the real story here. And I just found that very emotionally, like, satisfying. Like, I couldn't even believe how, I thought they did such a great job in such a short period of time, because I think this arc is only, like,
Four or five episodes?
Six episodes, maybe? Like, it's pretty short. And I was really taken in by, like, what was happening and their sort of ill-fated encounters. And then, of course, we also meet Fushiguro's father in this, who is, like, truly horrible. Like,
I guess it was interesting. I mean, you like him more, so maybe. I don't think I ever thought about, like, what was his parents like? Nor did I expect him to be that dude.
I mean, I don't know if I feel like there were sort of mentions about Fushiguro's, you know, like past and like what that relationship with the family is like and stuff. But I hadn't, he is like one of my favorite characters in here, but I don't think I had thought about it a lot. But again, that's why I was surprised. I don't know. It was like very interesting. It was like, oh, wow, this sort of changes a lot of dynamics that we're seeing in the present story. And then we end in a really sort of shocking place, I guess you could say. And then we flip back to the present day, and that sort of kicks off this huge lockdown in Shibuya,
where like the bad guys finally start really implementing their plan, as opposed to just like kind of dicking around and testing the waters.
And they essentially take Shibuya hostage, you know, like portions of it. And so then really it's like all hands on deck from all the sorcerers to really try to kind of infiltrate this while also attempting to save some of the human life. There is a very high body count.
Oh, yeah.
in this arc, both like
main characters and just random civvies.
Yeah, exactly. There are I don't think it's any real big secret that like the Shibuya arc, I wasn't really crazy about it for most of the arc. I think that has some interesting beats. I thought there were interesting moments, but Itadori and Sukuna, when like the aftermath of what that, like Itadori trying to like grapple with what has happened in Shibuya after that, is like, I thought was really interesting emotionally. You know, what happens to Gojo in here, I think story-wise, I thought was a bit undercut by the like, it felt like a big deal. Like, I thought it was a big deal in one episode where, like, a major thing happened. And then, like, the next episode made it seem like, oh, whatever. Like, he's fine. And, like, it'll be fine. And, like, I'm just like, I really wish you guys would, like, not. Sometimes the humor in this show, I think, undercuts it a little bit.
Not full Golden Kamuy, but.
No, oh no, never could be. But I wanted more of like that Gojo and Geto conference, like coming face to face seemed like it was going to be such a big deal. And like, it, in a certain sense it was, but I think in certain ways it wasn't, like because I felt like Gojo pretty quickly, maybe in like a beautiful friendship way, like kind of gets what's going on, like immediately, like he's like, like, and so I think in a way, I think that almost like undercut the drama of the moment a little bit.
I totally get what you're saying. I'm trying to pick my words carefully. I feel like one of the problems in general is Gojo is such a powerful character. If he sticks around too long, your question mostly is, why is any of this happening? Like, literally, he kind of has to be removed from the chessboard, lest you just, like, all right, you guys all deal with the background schmucks and let the main character do his, you know, let One Punch Man do his thing. But yeah, it does kind of, it can feel, it did lead to certain things. Once again, I don't want to do too much with this. In a way, then make certain things anticlimactic, maybe because they don't have the full time to breathe that they would otherwise, because they need to get Gojo off the chessboard for a while.
Yeah, that definitely, I get, like, I think, like, intellectually I get it, but then, like, my emotion, I wanted, like, the emotional payoff.
I mean, the thing that actually annoyed me the most about this whole season, I don't even remember his name, it doesn't matter, that dude with the sword who just, like, jumps in randomly. You know the guy I'm talking about? The dude who's like,
oh, he's a sorcerer, you mean?
He's like, he's just this dude that appears out of nowhere and just starts, and like, the remember the fight with the fish guy who like had all the water powers? Remember the guy who just jumps in the middle of that fight and becomes important for a while and then just fucks off? You're like,
oh, I remember now. Yeah, what you're talking about.
Like, what was the purpose of that dude? He just seemed to be there to like, he like just jumped in the middle of that fight and then was like, all right, now I'm really important for a while. And it was like, nah, now I'm out. And you're like, what? What?
I mean, I do feel like in the similar vein though, Al, I do feel like there were a lot of sorcerers that appeared in here like very suddenly. And I was just like, am I supposed to know who that, like, who is that? Like, am I supposed to like know who that guy is?
I feel like most of the other characters, if they introduced that dude before, like, I feel like most of the other characters had been introduced at some point earlier as like either connected to another sorcerer or like were minions that we saw in the background of like various earlier plots and like finally came to the forefront. But like that dude, if he was in an earlier, maybe, I mean, I'm not like the biggest, I'm not like, you know, Jujutsu Kaisen fan number one. So like, but as far as I can tell, that dude just was like, yo, I'm a new character. He was tied to one of the other characters, and that was supposed to be like a shocking reveal. But I literally can't spoil it because I don't remember who he was connected to.
I have no idea because I do feel like there would just be like random. Yes, that happened multiple times in this arc for me. Like I said, like I can't keep track of everybody, but like they'd be like, oh, and didn't you know he could do X? Or like, didn't you know he knows such and such? Or he knows this person or he's connected to this person? And I was just like, what? Who is that?
Because I at least felt like I had seen those characters before.
No, but even like powers or like...
Yeah.
Things they did or like their relationship to someone else. There's like a big Itadori relationship reveal where I was like, that guy? All right.
Like... Yeah, but like that dude just shows up and he's like, yeah, I'm crazy powerful, man, bro. I'm going to be a bunch of stuff. And then he's eventually like, yeah, I'm out. I'll probably come back some other time. Peace. And you're like, you were like a filler arc that wasn't filler.
Well, if you're talking about me, I think like most things are filler arcs unless like I'm like, what is this fight? Is this fight important? It doesn't seem like it. And it just seems like it's random and you just put this in here because there's nothing else to do and like I don't care. The only fight that I thought was like felt really good and plot relevant besides like Fushiguro's dad being like like summoned or whatever was like the Mahito fight was great and like really had like
emotional all those emotional
like it was like this is somebody Yeah, but also because it just felt like they were fighting about something. You know what I mean? Like they were fighting each other because there was a reason and they like he hated him and like, you know what I mean? Like there was just like that. Yeah, it was like, okay. But then like all the other fights, like I understand that like whatever, you're here because you're on the evil bad guy side and you're on the good guy side and like you're fighting or whatever. And I'm like, I don't care. But I know that I'm in the minority and I'm not telling anybody anything that like is shocking because I just feel like Jujutsu Kaisen is like the story is only in service to like having cool fights versus like the cool fights should be in service to telling the good story. And so, or at least that's how I feel. Clearly, that's not how most people feel about this show and they just want it to be about the cool fights.
I mean, like, rule of cool seems to be, like, the only real rule.
Yeah, I agree, because I mean, I am terrible, terrible, terrible in all shows at all times. Everyone can attest to it, watches anything with me, about, like, understanding how anybody's powers work in anything, ever. I'm always like, I have no idea.
I, who am a lore guy and, like, love, I'm, like, every once in a while, like, how does this motherfucker's power... Like, the dude who does, like, the blood lasers? I still have no idea how his powers work. Like...
Thank you. That was the one that was getting me... That one was getting me so bad. I was like, I just have to turn off my brain. I cannot possibly try to understand this. Like, I don't care. I don't care. Just.
Like magma guy, it's pretty easy to figure out how his I shoot magma and basically I'm fireball mage. All right, cool. I'm Caleb, but not as cool. Blood laser guy? If you were like, here's $1 million, Al, explain how blood laser guy's power works. I will not have to quit my job because I will not get that $1 million. Because I'll be like, you kind of make lasers and shields and dampening effects and control other people. Is it blood bending? I thought Katara could only do that on the full moon. I don't know.
Yeah, I and listeners, don't anybody come in to the Discord and explain to me how anybody's powers work, because that I don't care. I absolutely do not care at all.
She's just here to watch her beloved summoner boy and good openings and endings.
Like I just the thing is like I think I said this in the Discord, but like, can someone just talk to me about how they like Jujutsu Kaisen but don't love it and think it could be such a better show? And I think that it could be like so much better because it proves that it can be really good. Like, there are moments that are so good, and like the flashback arc, so good. The movie, so good. So I know that, like, totally capable of this, like, absolutely capable of this. But I just think from like a story character standpoint, I just don't think it like hits all the beats.
Part of me wonders how much it's, just the shonen grind. That, like, when he has time to plan stuff out, he can do stuff really well. And then other times he just fucking go to guys that shit of, like, I don't know, and now his blood laser can do this. Ah.
I mean,
All right, let's knock it out this week.
like, I mean, it's totally possible, or he might just like to do the fights. I don't know. Like, I feel like that's totally fair. Like, I get it. It's not necessarily like what the way I would focus the story, but like, I just feel like it just has these moments that it like glee, like I can see the glinting through, like, and the end of this arc is great. Like, the last episode is great. Like, that like last fight in here is great. And so it's like those are the moments where I'm like, I see, I knew you could do it, and like now I'm gonna get my hopes up, and then I'm gonna just like turn that off. And like, because like one of my favorite characters that I had been waiting and waiting and waiting like for them to reappear finally reappears, and it's like in a very surprising way, and like that makes me so excited. But it's like, I can't really have expectations because it will just go back to like rule of cool fights.
No, I totally get what you're saying. Like, I don't wanna believe that like my favorite character is gonna pop in and be cool and then just be like, ah, all right.
The thing is, like, I don't want it to just be cool. I want it to be
I'm
emotional,
like,
you know?
engaging.
Yeah.
You want it to be engaging.
But I mean,
No, I get it.
but good on them for having like a truly surprising end to this arc. I don't feel like from the beginning of this is where I thought we would end up, so.
I mean, it's very nice to look at. I'll probably continue watching. I think you'll just kind of be caught up. Although, I don't know, Kate, I say that, but you are a person to just like tap out and like, just be like, Kate's time is very valuable. Kate has limited time on this earth. Kate does not have to finish every series.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely am at least in for the beginning and like to see where it's gonna go, because like I said, the end of the season was really good, and a character that I love is now going to be like a major character. So fine, you're trying to get the Kate audience. Let's see if you can hang on to it.
That's fair. Kate, on a certain level, we're very lucky that we're not super popular because, like, if we were like super popular, this take would just like we would just get emails all day about like, why is she so dumb? Why does she not understand like the greatness of Jujutsu Kaisen? But like.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say, why is she so dumb and she doesn't understand the powers in Jujutsu Kaisen? Because, like.
Oh, that too. If you only understood the power, it would all make sense, and then the plot would be more vain. You'd be like,
I mean,
can't see me sticking out my finger.
Look, I'm never going to understand how these powers work, especially like the, what is it? The
main expansion?
Oh, yeah. That is like, my brain just like...
And the counter-domain expansions. Yeah, nope. And the counter-counter-domain expansions.
No, I have absolutely no fucking clue what is ever going on, period. I still don't even understand how, like, Trafalgar Law's power works in One Piece. I'm always like, I don't fucking know. It doesn't matter. Like,
or, like, every 10th stand in JoJo's.
Yeah, like... Fine, whatever. But I feel like at least in those things, maybe it's because all of that stuff feels like it happens with rapidity. Like, it's just like, okay, it just doesn't linger. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that's why it bothers me here. I don't know. Or maybe it's because I just don't feel like the emotional beats are there. And so, like, in those other things, like, I can accept. I know everyone's cracking up right now about the emotional beats of JoJo's, but they're there. Like... I don't know. Something about it makes me... I accept that powers have to just wash over me because it's like, even if somebody explains it to me afterwards, it's just like I can't somehow keep it in my brain when I'm watching it in some way. Like, I don't know. I can't explain why I can't wrap my head around these things, but I just let it, all right, I just let it flow. But somehow, like in Jujutsu Kaisen, they're just always talking about it, and I'm like, I just want you to shut up. Like,
what if everyone was Speedwagon?
Like, just let's just pretend that it makes sense and stop trying to make it make sense. Like, I just don't. It just let it happen.
Although, now that it's in my head, I do like in Jujutsu Kaisen, everybody is Speedwagon, but there is also just an announcer every once in a while. When it would just make absolutely no sense for people to be figuring out explaining stuff in their head. That's when the narrator breaks in. He's like, oh, I guess neither of these guys are going to explain it. All right, I'll explain it.
Well, because it's that lady's voice. They always have like this like older like woman's voice. Like, because when in the blood battle fight, because there's no one else there to explain what the frick is going on. And so there's just like this voiceover. I wonder how that, I guess I'm assuming in... the manga, it has like, yeah, like narration, I guess, for the, I've never read the manga, so like it must have narration over the fights, I guess. I like to imagine that they just put it in the anime because in the manga it's like just indecipherable. Like, everyone's like, I have no idea.
Or for some reason, I could just imagine, like, there's just asterisks and there's, like, long Mamashii Shiro from Ghost in the Shell, like, side notes and end notes.
Yeah, it's just, like, weird charts. It's fine. Like I said, I guess the thing is like, to a certain extent, I accept not understanding how powers work because I have a brain block against it, but something about the way they do it in Jujutsu Kaisen sometimes bothers me.
I will give, in your defense, Kate, at times in Jujutsu Kaisen, I am like, and once again, the like, even when like the main expansion kind of makes a little more sense to me just because of Type Moon and like Noble Phantasms and all that. But, like, the fact that they've got, like, the domain expansion and the anti-domain expansion and the anti-anti-domain expansion and, like, how those work, I still am like, okay, cool. I like you. Like, all right, I guess he can use this anti-domain expansion, but this time it makes him vulnerable. But this time, all right, whatever. Narrator-san, or excuse me, madam. Is he? Please tell me if he's vulnerable or not when he does this. I'm sure he will, because I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm curious for other people who, you know, if you enjoyed the first arc, sort of, or the first season, how you felt about this season. I also thought there was just like a lot of characters, but I guess the first season also had a lot of characters, especially once the like school tournament is going on or whatever. There's like a lot of people, but. I just felt like there were a lot of characters.
Well, the problem was in season one, they were introduced arc by arc. So, you know, you'd have the one where they went to that, you know, that school that had been, or where that kid met, you know, Patchface, or, you know, They went to the... So I felt like there were a lot of characters, but they were introduced arc by arc. But this was like, see, everybody was just the background character. Now they're all here. And here's a bunch of new characters. And now they're all fighting. Fight, 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 fight. The Itchy and Scratchy Show. So I think that doesn't help. Yeah, I'm curious. Yes, maybe, what do you call it? Maybe some people can join our Discord and school us about the intricacies of Jujutsu Kaisen, which I will read and Kate will go, huh, interesting, scroll.
All right, so that wraps up another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. I don't know what we'll talk about in April yet, but oh my god, is it time for the new season already?
I know that the new Spice and Wolf comes out April 1st.
Okay.
They're rebooting Spice and Wolf, so...
So we might be bringing you new anime in April. We'll just see how everything sort of lines up. But until then, see you next time.
See you next time, guys.